Ralph Nader in the United States wrote a book called Unsafe at Any Speed, in which he criticized the design of motor cars in America at that time. Tell me, what was the fallout from the publication of that book?
Well, from my point of view, I would never have ended up in the United States if he hadn't written that book. What happened was he criticized a particular car made by General Motors, the Corvair. And by coincidence, at about that time, US Congress had appointed a committee to consider whether the United States government should get into the road safety area, which they did eventually with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But the congressional committee, which was chaired by Abraham Ribicoff from Connecticut and had Bobby Kennedy as a member, called witnesses, and Nader was a witness. And it had become obvious that somebody was trying to collect information that could have been used to blackmail Nader. Glamorous blondes were coming up to him in the drugstore saying they'd just moved into the area and could he help move their furniture. And James Roach, the president of General Motors, appeared before the committee and was asked, did he know anything about putting a tail, as they say, on Nader? And he indignantly denied it. The next day, he asked for permission to appear again before the committee and said, to his dismay, he found General Motors had hired the detective agency. Now, this resulted in Congress voting to establish what became the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, with fewer dissenting votes than any bill put before Congress other than the decision to declare war on Japan after Pearl Harbor. So if the car industry or General Motors hadn't misbehaved, life could have been quite different.
But what were the implications for Australian road safety of Ralph Nader's book? Peter Vulcan elaborates.
Ralph Nader actually came out to Australia and addressed a meeting, and I guess that gave some impetus to vehicle safety in Australia, in that John Permazel, who was then with the Commonwealth Department of Transport, established a committee to formulate Australian safety standards for new cars.
Those safety standards became part of the first Australian design rules for motor vehicles. They also included standards for seatbelts and anchorages. The history of seatbelts in Australia started in the 1950s. John Knott.
Sir William Hudson, who was in charge of the Snowy Mountain Authority, becomes concerned about road safety for his own workers, has seatbelts fitted to all Snowy Mountain vehicles, and orders all employees to wear the seatbelts, which is important. It's one thing to fit them, it's another thing to wear them. If they found not wearing a seatbelt, they're given a warning. If they found again not to be wearing it, they were actually dismissed. And what happens in the Snowy Mountain Authority is that fatalities from road traffic accidents almost drop to zero.
In 1967, David Herbert, a scientist on the Snowy Mountain scheme, chaired the committee that was determining the standards for seatbelt wearing in Australia. Peter Vulcan.
The standards committee, at the stage of comment on the standard, had quite an altercation with the Ford Motor Company, because the standard specified that you had to have upper torso restraint, usually provided by a diagonal, and that diagonal should not be capable of being disconnected from the lap belt. In America, it was allowed to disconnect the diagonal, and if you stepped into most American cars, they were using the lap belt, and the diagonal portion of the belt was still in its original wrapping along the roof rail. Ford said, you don't need them. We stuck to our guns based on the Swedish research that showed that you did need upper torso restraint. Otherwise, your head went crashing into the dashboard or the steering wheel. And we won that battle. And Australia has always had upper torso restraint right since the word go.